Down the hall,
on the right, just pretty much toward the end.
It will have the next presenter's name, or if it's anybody else other than the person in that box, it'll say other, and click other, and it'll take you to the...
Okay, can we just leave this up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wendy.
And then to start it, then I click and it goes to her first. Okay, so I can go back. Okay. Okay,
oh,
great.
Anna Marie's going to take care of it for you and say that you have the brochures and the moderator.
Oh, for the brochures, yeah.
The,
and so I'm not sure if we're going to have, we may have one of these fellows as a monitor, but they're assigned to more than one room, so they're going in between rooms. But I'm going to ask one of them if they would be here at the very
end. Or we
end.
Can just leave them back there on the table.
You want to do that?
Here, I'll go do
okay.
it right
and why don't you put them out kind of nice
yeah,
and like
yeah,
a little
yeah,
U
like a little
or
stand.
Something.
Oh, that sounds great. That
yeah.
sounds great. Perfect.
Okay, this is great.
Perfect. We're good to go.
I'll stick my stuff under yours from there.
Mm-hmm.
So is that Travers? You were saying it was two or not?
Oh, actually, it's Ming Wang or something like that. It's not Vera Wang.
No, Vera Wang.
No, it's not Vera Wang.
And with those
Ming, that's very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I should keep that on or take it off. Oh, okay.
Is this yours?
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's fine. I just didn't know if somebody left it here or not.
So I can have this up here.
I could have this up here then, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Great.
We all like to run our own stuff, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, that's right. So once you put yours there, I'll put mine right on top and I'll know to take it. We'll do this.
Is this you?
Hello.
Oh. So, yes, that is. And so I'll just move over here.
Oh, no.
Sit there.
No.
Yeah.
When you don't you want me to sit over here with him?
In beginning and the end, but in between, are you going to be here? Or if you can go back there, do whatever you want.
I'll sit over there with him.
Okay.
Now, where's Gloria, our person that's been to Cuernavaca, because we have a camera. Maybe we won't have anybody come for the presentation.
Well, I wondered, I was going to ask you guys if you were letting people that you know about it, if you were distributing any flyers.
No, we really didn't.
Sending out an email.
You know what? No, we didn't.
Okay,
didn't
well, we may have that only guy right there.
Well, we may have one person.
Oh, it's still 5 minutes. It's too
huh?
We may.
It whatever.
If we don't get anybody, do we talk to ourselves?
We talk to
we'll
ourselves.
Have a guy come up here. And we have one guy. I want to hear your presentation. I didn't know if you were going to send it out through your networks or through, you know, sometimes that's what they do to kind of advertise the session. When I've done sessions here, I've made flyers. This is before the email internet days, and I would hand out the flyers to people like in the that I knew that had booths in the exhibit hall and stuff.
Never occurred.
You know, like that my master's alumni school and stuff like that to let them know.
Never occurred to us.
It's okay.
Never occurred to us. We're not upset.
Well, you know what? This is a first-time experience because you haven't been involved with APHA, but, you know, do it again next year and do something, and, you know? Because I really think the stuff that you guys have written and published, even beyond this, just like with the Hispanic population and the recruitment stuff, I think people should know about that, you know?
Well,
and I think that, and so
next year... charge of going and telling you everything?
Next year it's in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia?
Yeah, it's Philadelphia next year.
Oh.
And, you know...
oh, it's going to be in Philly next year.
Yeah.
Got two conventions in Philly, maybe.
I wish it was someplace else. I was so glad you guys could come to San Diego.
Hmm?
I was so glad you guys could come to San Diego.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. What is this? Is this Adela's?
I have no idea what
this is. Hey, we've got some chocolate.
No, I didn't. I don't know whose it is.
They left it. They left it for us.
Oh, wow. What a deal.
Dabs.
What
is this
deal,
your stuff?
And somebody left their earrings.
They must be coming back.
Somebody left their earrings.
Should we open these chocolates?
I would never leave myself.
And the purse.
No, that's me.
Oh.
I would no more leave my cell
phone. Okay, here we go.
Hi,
welcome.
Hello.
Come on in.
Found you.
Huh? You can have front row seating. It's okay. It's okay. We're going to wait a few minutes. You know, and what I do too sometimes is make flyers and put them on like the exhibit booths of people that I know that like, and I'll just put them on their table so that people can see. I'll put it up sometimes on the poster of
mm-hmm.
when messages are left,
mm-hmm.
so people can see. Do stuff like that.
They don't want
to. Yeah. Yeah. I just didn't have time to think about it. As you. you know, you got my email so late asking for the part three.
Yeah. And I didn't find out until later that there weren't CUs.
I know.
Not to worry.
Okay, yeah.
Not to worry.
The first time.
We're cool. All
right.
It's cold. It is chilly in here. Oh, I don't know how you can be in a... Like, you have a sleeveless dress.
I know.
I have a jacket, but it was so warm, and then here it's like...
Wait, just a few more minutes.
Oh, well.
A couple more minutes, too.
We could just make a little circle.
It's only informal.
What time do you have?
It's still early.
Yeah.
We have 2:25.
Oh, okay. Just wait 5 more minutes.
Yeah, 5 minutes.
We are not concerned. We could talk to one person.
Is this what, is Adela, is this yours?
No.
Mary Lou, that's Mary
Lou's. Mary Lou's, is this yours?
Yeah.
It was on the seat over here.
No, I left it over there, yeah, in case I needed it. Yeah.
Okay.
This is good. They have a cold water machine back there.
Yeah.
Where's all those flyers?
We put them down there on the table.
In January?
Yeah.
I might.
Go?
Mm-hmm. I do want to go. I want to go to Cuernavaca.
It's a good time to go,
yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful down there. No.
There's a new division.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We met her.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. So you came out to a grant?
No, she was at MLM.
Mm-hmm.
She was there in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very disappointed that I'm sorry she's not here, but I'm more disappointed for her that she didn't get to go to San Juan for Miriam's mm-hmm. thing. I was more disappointed for myself or for her.
Yeah.
I can't remember what happened,
why she wasn't able to go.
She and I talked about here's our photographer. And Gloria.
Gloria,
we have the highest level of camera.
I got some great pictures.
Yeah, the very best cameras. She was here. She'd been here since Sunday, and Wendy only ran into her today.
Oh, no, when did you guys run?
Sunday.
Okay, we left Sunday night.
Mm. We just didn't get our.
There was a mad rush since I arrived, getting settled. Getting out.
Annie Marie is with her son.
What's the bureau?
I'm in the office of the administrator, office of international health care. I used to be for many years prior to that. It was with the Bureau of Primary Health Care. I started with them when they were called the IFDA, Bureau of Health Care Delivery Assistant.
Where's Ed Martin?
Yep, Ed Martin. I knew Ed Martin. I was a youngin from the field when I met. I work for him.
Well, why don't we ask everybody just to come right here and then we can have a nice
Would everybody like to step forward, please? It's okay. No, if you want to stay where you're at, that's fine. That's okay. That's fine. We could be very informal because we have a small group. I'd like to welcome you. My name is Ana Maria Puente. I'm a RN with the Masters of Public Health and Global Health from George Washington University. This is my hometown, actually, but I went away to college to American University and got my BSN there, and then went to work with the Indian Health Service on the Navajo and Apache reservations, where I was a community health nurse and OB nurse. Then I went to NIH, worked at the clinical center, and there, from there went to Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, where I work presently. So I am glad and very pleased to welcome you to this session. There are three speakers, as you can see. This panel is going to give a historical context for developing a culturally competent healthcare workforce, and it will describe cultural and language immersion experiences in Mexico for nursing students, and it will discuss academic partnerships in the U.S.-Mexico border area to address health issues in communities along the border. Before I introduce our first speaker, I'd like to ask that you hold your questions and applause till the end, and then we will have a question and answer period. But being that we're just a few people, we can do it however you three feel comfortable going along. Well, first speaker is Dr. Mary Lou Bond, and she's a Samuel T. Hughes Professor of Nursing at the University of Texas at Arlington School of Nursing. She's also the co-director of the Center for Hispanic Studies in Nursing and Health, and that is also at the University of Texas at Arlington. Dr. Bond received her Ph.D. in maternal child nursing at the University of Texas at Austin, and she also has a certificate of midwifery from the University of Puerto Rico. She also has a master's in maternity nursing from the University of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, and I think she has a couple of other degrees, a master's in religious education from the Texas Christian College. Dr. Bond has published extensively in nursing with a special focus on Hispanic health issues, and she has taught at the graduate and undergraduate levels at Texas Christian University, and she's also served as the Associate Dean for undergraduate and doctoral programs at the University of Texas at Arlington. She's a member of the Board of Trustees of the Commission on Graduates of Foreign Nursing Schools and serves as a peer reviewer for the Journal of Multicultural Nursing and Nursing Education Perspectives. I first met Dr. Bond in Cuernavaca, Mexico, where she's developed and taught cultural immersion courses and has designed and taught medical Spanish at the Universidad Internacional. And if you would help me welcome Dr. Bond.
Well, thank you, Ana Maria, and thank you all for joining us. We were delighted when Ana Maria contacted us a few months ago and asked us to join you here. This is my first APHA convention. I've always secretly wanted to come, but not being a public health nurse, had never taken advantage of that. So this was just delightful, and I have thoroughly enjoyed being here this week. What Ana Maria did not say in her introduction about me, why would I be trying to work with Hispanic healthcare issues and teach something about developing cultural sensitivity and cultural immersion? I went to Central Mexico as a very young woman in my early 20s without language ability, without much knowledge of anything cultural. And then, as Ana Maria did say, ended up in San Juan, Puerto Rico, where I studied nurse midwifery, and then leaped back into Central Mexico and practiced nurse midwifery for 3 years. So, historically, I really grew up after my teen years in a Hispanic culture, in a sense, with many mentors, both from Mexico and Puerto Rico, who I consider taught me as much as what I know about the Hispanic culture today as anything that I have ever read or tried to learn in any other way. So for many years, I have been interested in helping students and professionals who desire to learn something about another culture and another language begin or continue that journey, because I do believe it is a lifetime kind of journey. So what we're going to talk with you very briefly about this afternoon is our experiences at the University of Texas at Arlington, and how we have gone about working with our students there. We've already been introduced as I am one of the co-directors of the Center for Hispanic Studies there, and Dr. Barr, whom you'll meet in just a few minutes, is another. I think that you would probably agree that most healthcare professionals feel unprepared somewhat to take care of the increasingly global society today. This has been something that has changed very dramatically over the last 20 years, and at a more accelerated pace over the last 5 or 10 years. But if you think about historical perspectives of diversity, we could, if we wanted to put it in perspective, really go back probably much further than the civil rights movement, but in this country certainly to the civil rights movement, where you all know that history as well as I did. And I think this movement really played a very large part in our nation's embrace of pluralism. We used to have an old-fashioned notion that the United States was something of the American dream, and everybody was the same, and then things began to change very rapidly. And with many of these ideas, I think the myth of homogeneity versus pluralism really began to change very dramatically, and we began to see a change, a beginning change in the incorporation of cultural beliefs into healthcare. And I think specifically of the idea that came out of Gerald Machado's work in the early part of the 21st century, in which the idea that Western medicine and culture could actually learn valuable lessons from folk healers and other healthcare workers was something that healthcare workers, health educators were very slow to embrace, although it has been around for a very long time. Today we see similar but still some very different emergent patterns. I think the immigration patterns have considerably changed over the last century, and certainly very specifically over the last quarter of a century. While our original immigration patterns were from Europe, we now are seeing from many other parts of the world, and of course our focus is very much on the Hispanic immigration to the United States. Within the field of nursing, there has been a very large movement to develop what has become a very popular word, cultural competence, in nursing. And of course, this is defined very differently by very many different authors, and certainly different even from country to country. But from an organizational perspective, the American Nurses Association started preparing guidelines back in the mid-80s about guidelines for measuring cultural competence in nursing. The American Association of Colleges of Nursing has developed a statement on equity. And now there are a number of other organizations, the International Council of Nurses and others, which are developing another group of frameworks. And I think that while that is very good, I also think it is somewhat interesting in that we have about 5 or 6 organizations now, nationally and internationally, which are developing different frameworks and different sets of standards for cultural sensitivity and cultural competency. So it becomes like, what do you use, and that kind of thing. Well, what our work has been is largely in the area of study abroad programs. And of course, study abroad programs are not new. They have always been a part of liberal higher education. In some schools more than in others, certainly in many of the private schools, they have been around for many years. The latest data that we have been able to look at suggests that interdisciplinary, and I'm not only talking about healthcare now, but from an interdisciplinary perspective, that there were in 2004-05, which is the latest data that we have, almost 206 students who enrolled in study abroad programs, and 154 of these were documented study abroad programs in the field of nursing. We have focused at the University of Texas at Arlington, our study abroad program within the School of Nursing, on Mexico specifically because of proximity and that kind of thing. Geographical proximity, certainly we are sitting on the border of Texas, and immigration, both legal and illegal, has become a way of life in Texas as it has in many other states. And whatever anyone believes about immigration, the rights of undocumented and legal, I think none of us would deny that there is an obligation to care for the individuals who are here. There has been continuing and accelerated, as you well know, discrimination based on color. One of the strongest emphases that we have encountered is the emphasis of the Hispanic immigrant, particular that from Mexico and Central America, is the predominance of social and family ties, which is very important for us to consider as we work with these individuals. We've also noted that there is reliance on physical labor among the individuals who come. So this is a growing pattern in our state and in many of the states surrounding us. One of the interesting things is some of the data comparatively in Texas, the ethnic distribution right now of Hispanic, white, American, and black, and the proportion of the various ethnic groups. Again, the demographic composition in millions is traced here from 2000 to projected 240, and there are some projections that have gone way beyond 240 up to 280 with dramatic changes expected. Now, in contrast to this, less than 2% of all of the registered nurses in the United States are of Hispanic origin. And many of the nurses who are Hispanic do not speak Spanish, and maybe second, third, fourth generation, and do not have the same kinds of understanding of some of the cultural issues that that many of our clients are presenting for us. In our center, we have made efforts in the form of several programs. We were first approached, interestingly enough, by one of our Hispanic students over 20 years ago saying, please help us recruit more Hispanics into nursing and help us help nurses in the healthcare agencies to understand how to better care for our population. And that was a program that started as the Challenge to Leadership program. After that, we developed a nursing elective, which Wendy's going to describe a little bit for you, a travel study learn program, which is a continuing education program. We offer medical Spanish out of the Hispanic Center. We've had a number of international crossing borders conferences in which we have looked at various issues as well and have offered research grants to researchers who are trying to understand issues related to Hispanic health. The Challenge to Leadership program I've chatted about has come as a request from students and now is very much of a part of our school. We have taken the approach to our study of other cultures of promoting the study of cultures through what we have called a modified anthropological approach. And I think that it is well known that anthropologists study cultures by immersing themselves in the cultures, going to the culture, staying for months, for years, to learn about the culture. So I think while many people are engaged in studying other cultures, the question of how to teach culture and how to develop skills among those who study other cultures is still somewhat of an unknown. Unlike some of the programs that we are very familiar with in healthcare, who go to other countries and deliver care, we do not go and deliver care. We have taken the philosophical stance that we are culture learners first, and healthcare providers second. So we have used that anthropological modified field study to direct our programs. And to that end, we have had two kinds of immersion experiences, long-term and short-term, and we have used, again, the anthropological method of participant observation and learning from those with whom we encounter on our immersion experiences. So with that, Dr. Barr is going to talk with us about two of the specific programs.
So I could just tell you a little bit about Dr. Barr. She's an associate clinical professor at the University of Texas at Arlington School of Nursing and also co-director of the Center for Hispanic Studies in Nursing and Health at the same university. She has over 25 years of experience in nursing education and has taught courses at the undergraduate level as well as serving as the honors program coordinator. Dr. Barr has presented a continuing education immersion course at the Universidad Internacional in Cuernavaca, Mexico for the past 8 years. Additionally, she's taught advanced nursing care in continuing education courses in Bangalore, India from 1999 to 2004. Notably, Dr. Barr in 2004 received a media award from Sigma Theta Tau International in recognition of producing a video to recruit Hispanics into the nursing profession. She has several publications on critical care nursing, and her area of research includes pain in critical care patients who are receiving neuromuscular blockers and projects to recruit Hispanics into nursing, in addition to developing Hispanic nursing students for community leadership. From 2004 to 2007, Dr. Barr served as the University of Texas at Arlington coordinator for the NIH-funded Bridges to Doctorate program. Please welcome Dr. Barr.
Thank you very much. I'm going to talk about the two programs that we have at the University of Texas at Arlington, the first one being our nursing elective, which is a comparison of two cultures. And for those of you in academia, when we got this course approved, our primary goal was to go to Mexico, but we thought, well, if we ever go to other countries, we left a bit of a generic title on it so that we wouldn't have to go through the curriculum committee of the university again. But we recognize the need, as Mary Lou has already mentioned, for students to be given more of an introduction to the Hispanic culture. Having been out in the hospitals in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex for 20 years, we recognize how many Hispanics and primarily Mexican patients we have from Mexico and how many of them don't speak English and, you know, what a challenge it is to care for them in the hospital setting and also out in the community. And so we wanted to give the students an opportunity to learn more about the culture. We have a 5-week summer program, and the first 2 weeks are spent on campus for several days of prep. for those of you who've taken students out of the country, and many of these students have never been out of Texas, it takes a lot of prep just to, you know, prepare them to go into a foreign culture. And things like safety issues, how to dress, the difference between to and usted, and things like don't throw your toilet paper in the toilet, you know, all things like that are just foreign to the students, so it does take a bit of prep. And it's a challenge to take students out of the country, and you need strong faculty, you need strong support from your university, and also the school that we've gone to in Cuernavaca has a wonderful infrastructure, and we've got a great relationship with them, and they support us in any of our endeavors. We've had quite a few students over 18 years, and they stay in homes, stay with a family, and when we arrive in Cuernavaca, we're there for 2 weeks, from Friday to 2 weeks, another Friday when we leave. But the first thing that happens is we're picked up in Mexico City and taken to Cuernavaca, and we go to the adoption room. And that's where they're adopted by their Mexican mama and papa. And that's when the first bit of shock starts, because mama and papa don't speak English to them. And they really do have a shock, let me tell you. So they live with a family for 2 weeks, and the family is responsible for providing their meals, bringing them to and from the school, and for being their parents for 2 weeks, and also for communicating with them. And it's a wonderful opportunity for them to learn about the culture and to practice their Spanish. Families have worked with UNINTER for years. They've been screened, and they're really wonderful families. We do have field trips where we take students to Segura Social, the hospital, major hospital, public hospital in Cuernavaca. We take them to the Mercado, so they can see where the Mexican people buy their foods and their herbs. And we, you know, they have wonderful excursions where they can learn about the culture. This is a group that's at the hospital on one of our tours. You might actually recognize one of the people in there. We take both our students and our healthcare provider groups to the hospital. The students that go have several assignments. Now, they get 6 hours of undergrad credit, and graduate students get 3 hours. And, you know, for those of you who've taught students, they think, oh, we're going to Mexico for just a lot of fun for 2 weeks. Well, yes, we want them to have fun, but there's also some work involved. So they do have a paper where they have to pick a topic from. We use Purnell's model of cultural competence, and he has 12 cultural domains, and they have to pick one of his domains for their literature review and a subsequent project. We also have them do a cultural journal where they have to write on 10 of Purnell's domains and their experiences in the culture and how these experiences will influence their future life, and in particular, how will this influence their nursing care, the patients that they're caring for. And a typical entry is one on communication, which is one of Purnell's domains, and they will talk about how, especially on that first day, they were in that family and no one knew any English and they didn't know any Spanish, and what a shock that was, and how vulnerable they felt. And they realized, when they thought about it, think about the patient that's in critical care and the patient's family, and that family and patient don't know any English. So it's a wonderful experience for them to learn what it could mean for a patient who doesn't, you know, who can't communicate with the healthcare providers. Another interesting example, I've read several journal entries, is mealtime, because nutrition is one of Purnell's domains. And the families in Mexico, of course, eat the big meal in the afternoon, and it can go on for 2 hours. Everybody sits at the table, you speak, you know, you converse and all. And quite a few of the students talk about how wonderful this is, and talk about the fact that they never eat a meal with their family in the United States, and they eat a lot of fast food, and people sit at a TV tray in front of TV, and they say that they're going to go home and make sure that their family eats like a family in the future. So that's a wonderful thing that's happened. They also have group projects, and we've had some really innovative projects from our students in terms of traditional healing. We've had them, we had a couple of students one day come in as curanderas, and they did a healing service, and it was really very innovative. We've had students do projects on herbal medicine and infant nutrition. And this is an example of a typical poster at Segura Social, which is the Eames Hospital in Cuernavaca. And the hospital does not use bottles, so all the mothers breastfeed. And everywhere you go in the hospital, you see posters like this, and you'll see babies running away from bottles and all. And it's really an interesting, it's a wonderful hospital. And this is just an interesting cultural take on infant nutrition, which is obviously far healthier than bottle nutrition. In answer to our student elective, we had nurses come to us 5 years after the student elective was started, and they had heard out in the community from students who'd been to Cuernavaca, and they said, well, how come you're not doing anything for us? And so we started a program for healthcare providers, and it is a one-week program, very similar to the student program, and it's exactly the same cultural immersion that where the travelers live with the family. We've had healthcare providers from all sorts of areas. We've had people from public health. We've had primarily nurses, but we've had physicians, and we've had physical therapists, etc. And we've had spouses. We've had real estate agents and all sorts of people. But if they go with us, they go on the trip, and they all go to the same classes and everything. And it's wonderful. We've had people from 25 states and two foreign countries. And, of course, we primarily get our people from Texas, California, the border, New Mexico, the border states, but it's amazing. People come from New Jersey, Minnesota, all over Chicago, and you're like, now tell me why you're all interested. And there are Mexican, Hispanic populations all over the United States. A lot of migrant workers and healthcare providers are dealing with these patients, and they want to know the best way to care for them throughout the U.S. This just shows the people here in the top picture are enjoying a conversation out on the patio. They're doing medical Spanish, and that's just in front of the school, some of our graduates there of the program. The language study is both formal and informal. We are at the school for 6 hours, and this is for both the student program and the healthcare provider program. And the first 3 hours, there are no more than 5 students to 1 teacher at your level of language, and they have 12 levels of Spanish. We do seminars on varied topics and for 1 hour, and then the last 2 hours are spent either in medical Spanish or in grammar. And then, of course, the informal is the opportunity to talk with the family, with the taxi drivers, with anybody on the street, the vendors. There's lots of informal opportunities. During our seminars, we have a talk on the healthcare system of Mexico and how it differs from the U.S., role of women in the family. We have wonderful speakers on that, and it's interesting that many of the families are very traditional, where the father is the breadwinner and the mother is at home caring for the children and the family. And then more and more we're seeing a change in especially the middle class families, where they're seeing more divorce in Mexico, and you have one parent families. And it sounds, when the we have one speaker who is a divorced woman, and she comes and talks about how, you know, she does everything for the family, for her children, and works a full-time job, and at night is doing laundry and helping kids with homework. And we said, well, that sounds just like the United States. So anyway, it's changing for many people. Traditional medicine, this is really an important seminar, because whether people will admit it or not, most people are using some form of herbal medicine. Hispanics, and of course a lot of people in the U.S., you know, as well. But a lot of times people don't want to admit that they're using traditional herbal medicine because they think you're going to think that they're odd. And that's something that's so important for us to know about because of the interactions with medications. I, for example, stay at a home. I've stayed with a family for 5 years now, and they're pretty affluent. And they have private health insurance. About 5% to 10% of Mexicans do have private health insurance. And it took about 3 years before the mama and the family admitted to me that she goes to a curandera if she needs a curandera. And so that was really an interesting, it was very enlightening for me to know that despite whatever social status, people are probably using healers and they're using herbs. So that's something that we should be aware of. A role of religion is extremely important to the Hispanics in terms of health. It's very tied in. And, you know, we see here in the U.S. how they have the medals and the pictures of the saints on their bed when they're ill in the hospital, especially. And this shows you at the hospital that we go to, where the ambulances drive up, there is a shrine there so that the people can get out and they can pray before they go into the hospital. And all through the hospitals, all through the cities, and we see shrines, especially to the Virgin of Guadalupe all over. And I will admit, I am a very, I love the Virgin of Guadalupe, especially when she gets all the students down there and back safely. We are very grateful to her. We have had a lot of comments from our participants, both students and healthcare providers, of what a life-changing experience it is to go and learn about the culture. We've had students, especially can't stop talking about the trip. We had one young man. I was quite worried about him before we went down. He was very overweight, a nursing student, just a wonderful guy. I was afraid he couldn't walk because we walk up and down miles, and he had had a bad knee, but he assured me he was going to be okay. He was the best sport. He kept everybody's spirits up on that trip. You know, students can sometimes get down. They get homesick and everything, but he lost 20 pounds in 2 weeks, despite the fact that he told me he ate as much food as Mama would put in front of him. But he walked so much. And that was something that he didn't do in the U.S. So it was a real life-changing experience for him. We have people who use this knowledge in their practice. Just last week I got an email. I said, boy, this was fortuitous, from one of our former students who's now director of nurse oncology education for the state of Texas. And she said, my own nursing practice has been impacted from the program numerous times. I am much, much, much more aware of non-English speaking patients, no matter their culture. And I cite my first critical thinking journal entry from the trip as an example when I talk to other nurses about culture, language, and nursing. She goes on to tell about how a group of us got lost in the city with no way to communicate with the taxi driver. It was one of the most frightening experiences ever because we had no idea what he was saying and vice versa. And we were just trying to get home. I thought, man, it must be extremely scary when non-English speaking families have no idea what we're saying to them in the acute care setting, on top of all the other stress that comes along with a sick family member. So those are the types of experiences and opportunities to learn that our students have experienced, and our nurses. And it is life-changing, and we know that it translates into practice, and Mary Lou will talk a little bit more about that. And finally, we do learn a lot about culture. This is a picture of some of the ballet folklore co-dancers. We have a lot of fun, and you're all welcome to join us in Cuernavaca, Mexico. Okay. We've taken as many as close to 30. One per 10.
How many of you are educators here? Okay. Five educators. We're all educators. Well, what I'm going to talk a little bit then, you would be interested in, because as educators, you certainly know that we are all asked to measure the outcomes
of our educational practices. And when we first started going, we'd come home and other faculty would say, well, how was your vacation? And we just laughed, how was your vacation? Because we had come home from 2 weeks of worrying about the students 24 hours a day and were they safe and were they learning and this kind of thing. The other question that we got a lot was, do you really believe that 2 weeks or 1 week or whatever, what do you really believe are the educational learning outcomes of such a short-term experience when you've already said that you believe cultural learning is, the development of cultural competence is a lifetime experience and continued journey? So after 8 years, after we've been doing this for 20 years now, but after the first 8 years of implementing the short-term cultural immersion programs that Wendy has just described, another colleague and I, Dr. Mary Lane Jones from San Antonio, Texas, and I decided to do a study in which we measured the learning outcomes and some other variables from people who studied and stayed immersed in a culture for various lengths of time, because we realized at that point that all of our data was anecdotal data. It was descriptive data. People would tell us, I learned, it was a life-changing experience, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it was not statistical, hardcore data. So we set about to see what we could learn by measuring some other variables. And we did a study, which was published in 2000, called Personal Adjustment, Language Acquisition, and Cultural Learning. We used a convenient sample of 150 students from the United States who all studied at Universidad Internacional. They were not necessarily all nurses. They were any students who stayed there at the university where we took our students for various lengths of time. And we measured variables of students who were there for 2 weeks, for 4 weeks, for 6 weeks, for 8 weeks, or for 10 weeks. So we had a range in our sample from 2 to 10 weeks. And we used 5 instruments in our study over 5 different time periods. So short-term was defined operationally as anywhere from a range of 2 to 10 weeks. And on day one, when regardless if they were going to stay 2, 4, 6, 8, or 10 weeks, on day one, all of the students received a demographic survey, a social situations questionnaire, the social situations questionnaire ask questions about where they expected to feel comfortable, uncomfortable in a different culture, interacting with people of a different language, of different traditions, of different values, and that kind of thing. On the first day, we also administered something called an expectations questionnaire. And that the questions on that instrument tried to get at what they expected to get out of the experience, what they expected to learn about the culture, what they expected to learn about the language, what kind of difficulties they expected that they might encounter while they were there. And we did a self-assessment of personal health. It was a 5-point scale that we developed within the School of Nursing about how they felt their health was when they arrived in Mexico. And then finally, we worked with the university there to measure their language proficiency on admission to the school. And Wendy mentioned that the school has 12 levels of Spanish. So we were able to get a baseline piece of data about where they were. If they could only write their name, obviously they didn't have any language proficiency. Some had studied previously in college, and so they ranged anywhere from no language proficiency to other ranges. Then midway throughout the program, we reassessed their health assessment, the social expectations questionnaire. We introduced at that point another instrument called the Best Friends checklist, because we were very interested in knowing if they were interacting with only people who spoke English, people with whom they had come to Mexico, or if they were making new friends of the Mexican culture while they were in Mexico. And then upon departure, again, we measured social situations, expectations, best friends checklist, assessment of health, and their exiting language placement to see what they had obtained. The findings. In every instance, there were improvements in personal adjustments. People had become more comfortable with the Mexican culture over length of time, and again, the more length of time they stayed, the more comfortable they had become. We did note that age and income were related more to anxiety and discomfort. The younger the persons and those with less income, the more discomfort experienced and the higher levels of anxiety. With regard to language acquisition, again, there were improvements at all levels, whether it was 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, or 10 weeks. There was an incremental increase in language acquisition, and that, again, was measured on the instruments that were provided by the university where we studied. The cultural learning, increased incrementally with the length of time that we stayed. So, in summary, participants with different lengths of time had similar patterns in each one of the areas. Most of the individuals entered at least with some anxiety and expected discomforts along the way. But the majority reported stability in health regardless of the length of stay, and that came somewhat as a surprise to us because we've dealt with a number of traveler illnesses during the course of our 20 years there. But in this study, most reported reasonable stability. Again, all participants made language progress. Again, it was interesting to note that the younger students from 10 to 25, which were the majority, about 91% of our total participants, made more progress in language study than older participants, because there were people studying in the school who were 40, 50, 60, and so forth. So I don't know, if I guess if you want to learn a language, the moral of the story is to learn it as young as you can. That was kind of interesting. One of the discouraging things, I think, was most did not report that they had made friends with a lot of the Mexican persons, even though they got attached to the people in their families and the households. It is discouraging, I think, and a lesson for us as teachers to not hang together so much when we are with students in another country, but to let them independently, or encourage them to independently interact with the persons of the country. Most entered with high expectations of cultural differences, and most people found that over time they felt that there were more similarities, although there were cultural patterns and traditions, but there were more human similarities than there were differences. Finally, we do believe that cultural immersion is a valuable strategy in learning about other cultures. And certainly we know that we need a lot of additional study to understand all of the factors that impact cultural and language acquisition. And finally, teaching strategies need to be continued to be examined and compared. There's very, very little in the literature about the outcomes of different teaching strategies and the outcome measures. How do we best measure cultural learning? Language acquisition is pretty easy to measure. Cultural learning and cultural competency are significantly more difficult to measure. And finally, I think we all believe that cultural learning is a lifelong endeavor, and that partnerships can help with this. Yes, it is published, and I have a copy here, and I can give you that reference. Thank you very much.
Uh-oh, I'm going to have to start over.
What did I do?
No. Well, okay, we'll do that in a minute. Thank you, Dr. Barr and Dr. Bond. I'd like to say, just mention that I had met Dr. Barr and Dr. Bond when I had been at Universidad Internacional in Cuernavaca, Mexico, a few years back, and I had initially gone to the university to take some courses myself, and I met them and saw the program and saw the students there, and I was so interested and impressed with the program that I decided the following, I guess it was 6 months later, they had another group going, so I thought, well, I'm going to participate in that program, come back down to the Universidad Internacional, which I did, and I work in various settings, first clinically and then administratively at the national level, and have developed projects along the U.S.-Mexico border. So you think, well, she's Chicana, she's from Southern California, she's functional in Spanish. Why would she need to go to a program like this? But there's something about university to university. You know, there's a lot of these kinds of programs, but there's something about the connection, the partnership, and the context that they make presentations and that they do these field trips and the kind of information that you get, the way it's structured, the way it's delivered, that kind of makes you think a little bit more. And even sometimes when it is your culture, being Mexican-American is different than being Mexican. And I spent my summers in high school going to Guadalajara. My mother would send us away because she didn't want my sister and I to be around the hippies. And so she did not like that. And she said, you're not going to sit around and go to the beach and so forth. So she sent us to Mexico. And this was in the 70s when the women in Mexico did not wear pants. Not even pantsuits. So you couldn't wear pants and you didn't go anywhere without a chaperone. And she knew that. She grew up in Mexico City, and so she said that, you know, you're going to Mexico, you're going to Guadalajara, and we lived with a family. So I'm very familiar with the culture and so forth, but being a health professional in the United States dealing with patients and people who come from Mexico, this kind of a program offered me something that just taking the executive course at Universidad Internacional didn't offer. And it's a context as a health professional in the United States. I wanted to learn a little bit more, and I had certain questions about the Mexican health system. And so that's what something like this offered. It also offers CEUs, which I needed. And so I got my CEU certificate, and I got that out of the way. And then also because they have to apply for CEUs, then, you know, there's a whole process of having certain goals and objectives and things in place that really help you as a professional. Well, with that said, I'd like to introduce our third speaker, Dr. Adela Gonzalez, who is the Executive Director of the Center for South Texas Programs and the South Texas Area Health Education Center of the University of Texas School of Health Science Center located at the Laredo campus. Dr. Gonzalez has served as faculty at the University of Texas School of Public Health at the San Antonio Regional Campus and at the University of North Texas Health Science Center. Her past appointments have included Vice President for Community Affairs and Institutional Diversity and Vice President for Administration and Strategic Planning at the university. Dr. Gonzalez was instrumental in developing the School of Public Health at the University of Texas Health Science Center and has served as the interim chair for the Department of Health Management and Policy and later as the interim chair for the Department of Social and Behavioral Sciences. In addition to directing the doctorate program in public health, Dr. Gonzalez has also taught at the master's and doctoral level, and she currently serves as on the advisory council to the University of Texas at Arlington Center for Hispanic Studies. Prior to her academic career, Dr. Gonzalez spent 25 years as a public health administrator at the Austin-Travis County Health Department and as director of public health and community health programs for the City of Dallas Health and Human Services Department. Welcome, Dr. Gonzalez. Let's see where. I think we have to. Yeah, I think we have to go over there.